The following show is closed caption for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
As I speculated yesterday, we now know Clay Matthews out for a month. After successful surgery yesterday to repair his broken thumb. How big is that? On a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a loss that is? Assuming on a scale of 1 to 10, the loss of Aaron Rodgers is about an 18. I think it's 7-ish. Yeah, I think it's, you have seen, although there are guys that have shown they can take up the slack somewhat, you have seen what happens when he's out of there. And I think this is a pretty big deal. I don't think that means they're not going to make the playoffs or anything like that. But it's a pretty big deal. We'll see how the other guys pick up the slack. I would argue that if you're going to pick one player after Aaron Rodgers that you would least want to lose, I would say it's Clay Matthews. I would say he's the heart and soul of the Packers defense. So it's a pretty big deal. Maybe a little bit more on that later in the show. What we're not sure how big a deal is yet is Mary Burke announcing yesterday that, yes, she is a candidate for governor. I mentioned this briefly yesterday. We really don't know what this means. We really don't know how much money she plans to spend. Here's what is very interesting. Two things. One, in her announcement and in her video, this is going to be all about jobs. This is going to be all about the economy. There's no longer a Commerce Department. Scott Walker changed that. But when there was, she was Commerce Secretary. So she's willing to put her record of job creation with Jim Doyle. That's what she's willing to run on. Very, very interesting. I mean, full bore. Two, my suspicion is there's going to be no talk of Act 10. That which prompted a recall of Scott Walker looks like it's going to be AWOL. Now, again, it's too early to tell. I don't know exactly what their strategy is going to be. However, I think that's going to be a tough sell. When you look at the success it's had in helping school districts rein in costs and hasn't hurt education, you would think, because she is a member of the Madison School Board, that education would be a big issue for her. I can tell you that I've talked with Republican strategists, and they thought this was going to be all about education because that's her. That's what she is. That's what defines her politically. I don't know. Now, I do stick by what I said yesterday, that just about any criticism of her, especially from people who do what I do for a living, is going to be branded as misogyny. You woman hater. The same way any and all criticism of President Obama's racism. But here's something else I thought about. Now, Kathleen Vianaut will not definitively say that she isn't running for the Democratic nomination. I'm telling you, she's not going to run. Mike Tate, chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, has made it very clear nobody else is welcome. This has been the Democratic strategy of late. The party picks the candidates. The party grassroots seems to be okay with that. There hasn't been any type of open rebellion. There's been a little bleeping and moaning, but not much. Namely, because they probably don't see anyone who they think has a better shot than her. That would be my guess. Let's say that I'm right about that, and Tate successfully clears the field for her, and there's no Democratic primary. Do you know what that would mean? And I really hadn't thought of this until last night. I was just thinking about what this means that she announced, because I'm trying to think of what motivated her to announce right now. I think in part it's to clear the field, to take away any uncertainty. Yeah, I'm in, I have personal wealth, and you're not going to beat me. So that means as of October 7th, it's very likely the field is set. That's really early. That's really, really early. Now, don't think presidential politics. Think gubernatorial politics. It's early. I don't know if it's unprecedented, but I suspect that it is. That a year and a month before the gubernatorial election, we have almost no doubt as to who the two candidates are. We know it's going to be Scott Walker. I am almost as certain that it's going to be, I'm certain it's going to be Mary Burke. Even if somebody runs against her, it's going to be Mary Burke. Nobody's going to beat her. And nobody, it's likely that nobody's going to challenge her that could do her any real damage in advance of the general election against Scott Walker. So here's what you have. Why do I think this is interesting? So a year and roughly a year and a month before the general election, the field is set for the general election in November 2014. Why is that a big deal? Well, what happens for the next year and a month? Now that we know who it is, do they fully engage? Does she continue to attack the economy? Because that apparently is where she's going in her campaign. Does she continue to attack the economy, the Wisconsin economy? What if it continues to improve? Now, here's the other thing you have going on. Whoever you blame or don't blame, the nonsense in Washington is extremely unhealthy for the national economy. And what's bad for the national economy is bad for Wisconsin. If we default, if we don't raise the debt ceiling, and we default, there are serious, serious threats to the economy. About the only thing that's really been, and here's the other thing you got to remember, about the only thing that's been roaring about the economy is the stock market. Why? Because it's being artificially propped up by Fed and administration policies. The easy money and low interest rates have made it so inviting to invest money in the stock market because nothing else pays any type of return. Nobody is really even concerned about the risk anymore of putting their money in the stock market. They've got to put it somewhere. At some point, it's like, well, I need to invest my money in something. And even those who are historically jittery about the stock market, they're doing that. Well, already... What's going on? The machinations in Washington have seen the stock market take a hit. For some people, that the stock market defines entirely whatever recovery we've had. So you could have the 2014 governor's race in Wisconsin with a backdrop, potentially, of a national economy that has slipped back into recession if we were ever really out of it. And we barely were. So you'll have that going against any state's economy, and she's going to try to make this about the economy. But here's the bigger question. What does she talk about for the next year and a month? Or does she do kind of a groundhog here? She comes out, makes an appearance, and goes away. That would be interesting. Does she start spending some of her own money now? Now that she's out there, here's going to be the goal. Republicans are going to try to define her. She's going to try to prevent that from happening. And that could be problematic. But only time will tell. But to me, what's going to be interesting here is, what does she do now? All right, she's announced. She's out there. Does she start campaigning? Is this going to be a year and a month long campaign? And how does Scott Walker respond? What does he do? What What is his response? Does he fully engage in a gubernatorial campaign now? Is this one after the other after the other? You know, does she get out there and does he, and he's already responded? And what does that do to voters if we know both candidates, the field is set, and they engage now? I don't have the answers to any of those, but I think they're very interesting questions. Let's turn our attention now to Washington. As I mentioned, the default jitters are getting louder and louder from D.C. As he is every day until this mess is settled, 8th District Congressman Reid Ribble is joining us. Reid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jerry. It's good to be here. Good morning, everybody.
When you say here, do you mean on the air or in Washington?
On the air. this is the only sense of home I have, Jerry.
Yeah, you know, we try to bring you back here for these 5-10 minutes every day. Gerald Seib in the Wall Street Journal has an interesting piece today. He says, look, here's why Democrats are dug in on the shutdown, and now, really, it's not the shutdown impasse anymore. It's really morphed into the debt ceiling impasse because they want to break this cycle, this fever, last-minute crisis over spending bills and increasing the nation's borrowing limit. They have drawn the line in the sand. They are not, this just isn't going to happen again and again and again because it's going to destroy any chance for President Obama to accomplish anything in his second term agenda. So they don't care what happens. This is it. This is their last stand. They're not playing this game again. Is that how you see it?
Well, I certainly hear that rhetoric coming from the president, from the executive branch, from the president. You know, this non-negotiation talk that he's having would defy history. I mean, since 1978, almost half or even a little bit more than half of every debt limit increase was associated with some type of reform. Remember, the debt limit is a symptom. The problem is spending and revenue that is not in alignment. And so both sides, both parties have used the debt limit as a stop point to force the discussion on the broader issues of getting into balance. And that is happening right now. And what the president is saying to the American people, too bad. I don't really care. Let the country default if I have to negotiate. I'm not going to negotiate. And that's an untenable position from my standpoint.
You got a couple of things going on. Senate Democrats are expected to vote to extend the borrowing authority through 2014, which probably isn't going to go anywhere. But there's also talk of a very short extension to continue negotiations. On the short extension, whatever it would be, what's the point in that if you're not negotiating?
Well, exactly right. And so stop and think about this. He's going to say, I'm not going to negotiate on the debt limit, but if we get past the debt limit, I'll negotiate on the debt limit.
Yeah.
Why not just negotiate now and be done with it? You know, yeah. And it may end up just because of timing that we've got to do something that has a built-in structure and framework to force the negotiation, but they will negotiate. They cannot say to the American people, it must be my way only. That's not the type of government we have. That is not a democracy.
Talking with Congressman Reid Ribble. Okay, now what you've got going on is talk of prioritizing where our foreign creditors would get paid first. Jay Carney referred to prioritizing as default. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are that if you don't pay your bills, you default. I can tell you that the federal government enters into about 3 million contracts annually. Most of those contracts are with private sector businesses. And if we're going to say we're only going to pay this and Social Security or this and Medicare, there is not the cash flow with which to pay everybody. And I believe that we have to pay our bills. That's a core foundational belief. And so that's why I think you take this moment and you use that very harsh trigger as a point to bring into and reform the very things that cause us to be here in the first place. And I know that there are some on my side of the aisle that would disagree. They would say there is no such thing as a default as long as you pay interest on the debt.
Right.
But I would have people consider if I had a bunch of bills here at the end of the month, and one of them was my home mortgage, and I went to the bank and said, well, I'm just going to pay you the interest, and then tell the guy who I bought my car from and the power company and everybody else, I can't pay you. I can't even tell you when I can pay you, but I'll pay you sometime in the future. There's a good chance the lights are going off.
You know, we've talked about this a little bit in the past. Your name has been associated with a group of House members who are getting itchy. Who are, well, go ahead, talk about that.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair to say I'm getting itchy.
Yeah.
I think that I do take getting up against the nation debt limit very seriously, and I think that's not the same as getting itchy, depending on how you define that.
Yeah.
But I do believe that we can't have a one-sided negotiation. We have to have both sides at the table here. And the shutdown is one thing. The debt limit is another. And I view those two things differently. However, they've now been merged. And whether we like it or not, they are now merged into the debt limit discussion.
Yeah, but wouldn't you say, though, that's really what we are talking about now?
No.
Because clearly,
no doubt.
Yeah, we've survived the shutdown. Yeah. And it is going to pale in comparison if we default.
Yeah, I think we can. I just don't believe we can default, and the threat of that default, and the president's aware of this as well. He really is, and he can sound tough if he wants. And but the fact of the matter is, this will bring people to the table. It just will. I believe that.
We're a little short on this segment today, so I've got one more question for you, Reed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm too young to remember this, but I've read about the Kennedy administration and one crisis after another, segregation, Cuban Missile Crisis. This is weird because this feels that way, yet it's entirely centered in Washington.
Well, it's in part centered in Washington, Jerry. I think in part of this, though, there's some emotional dynamics at play that I believe are going on here. A few weeks ago, about a month ago, the Congress of the United States, maybe it's 2 months ago, time goes by so fast, the Congress of the United States said to the president, we're not going to let you go into Syria. And he viewed that as weakening the office of the presidency. And so lately you're seeing him being very, very tough, trying to get some gravitas back, the movement into Somalia and Libya this week with our Navy SEALs and Delta Force, and now the debt limit discussion and government shutdown is a bit of the president trying to gain some gravitas and power back. And this has to be playing into this.
That's a very interesting observation, but we're out of time. Congressman Reed Ribble, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jerry. Talk to you again.
Absolutely. Do it tomorrow. But when I get a minute here, I want to pick up on what he just said because I think it's doggone interesting. It's 9:23.
For all things Jerry Bader, jerrybadershow.com.